Donalana Kitchen talks about food. Donalana Kitchen talks recipes. Donalana Kitchen talks about lots of other things on community radio. We are the Donalana Kitchen. My name is Lana Noctegal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We get together here once a week live on this fine community radio station. And this is volunteer driven. This is a special thing to put in your ears. This station is like no other in this area. So join us today. We get by with a little help from our friends.
Yes, the Donalana Kitchen Show is sponsored in part by Practical Farmers of Iowa, a member-based, farmer-led, nonprofit organization that has been strengthening farms and communities through farmer-led investigations and information sharing since 1985. You can find out more at their website, www.practicalfarmers.org.
Thank you, Donna. Yes. As I said, this is community radio, and you have the great good pleasure of being able to listen to us during our fun drive. We get by with help from our friends. You can become a member. You can just plain show up and volunteer. You can bring in cookies. We like that, too.
Yeah. The whole thing is run by volunteers.
We are.
They couldn't pay Lana and I enough to do this.
Oh, that's a good way to think of it, Donna. Yes, it is. Yes, it is. So today, in the spirit of giving, we're going to talk about things that are in pockets. Pockets like, you know, pockets where you have your spare change or whatever. And so later in the show, we're going to be talking about food that is wrapped up in dough, the kind of thing that you can eat with your hands, because those kind of comfort foods are all over the world, and we all have our favorites. So Donna Prisgintas and our wonderful, multi-talented engineer, Evan Taylor, are going to give some recipes and talk about that sort of food. But first, I hope you are all kind of settled down after the daylight saving time. We fell back as opposed to springing forward. If you're still a little groggy from that sort of thing, I read someplace that make sure you get some fresh air and sunshine. Ha ha, sunshine. We haven't seen that in a while.
Let's work on that sunshine bit, right?
But that will help. So, oh dear, here we go into the darkest time of the year. Oh, and this time of the year also. This is Election Day.
Hallelujah. That's another community event. It's the mayoral election and the hospital board and the city council election.
Some folks, yes.
Yes.
Yeah. All sorts of things to vote on. We went through
the important things.
Yes,
that really affect us locally.
We went through kind of a traumatic election last year, long about this time. And I found a little reading here, a little bit of satire from a writer called Jenna Friedman, and this was written last January, actually. It's about elections in general. It did refer to the specific one we had last year, the big hoopla with the presidential election. But it has something to do with all elections in general. And it's always nice to have a recipe to read here. Jenna Friedman has written something that is a recipe for an election. This is from The New Yorker.
Aha, I thought so.
January 9th, 2017. This was after the election last year, but since it's Election Day, here's some things to remember. A recipe for an election. Warning, this dish contains nuts. Ingredients, 1/4 of all eligible voters, or less, depending on how many votes you can suppress. Ah. One charismatic leader with a wildly successful book, TV show, or film, and weird hair. Ooh, ooh. One gaggle of Russian hackers. One well-timed WikiLeak. Ooh, that worked, didn't it? A dollop of racism, a spritz of anti-Semitism, and the media. Ooh, that's the ingredients. Preparation. Prepare the planet to record temperatures to accelerate climate change and trigger a global refugee crisis. Put the refugee crisis aside and let it rise. It will come into play later. Number two. Next, you'll need a melting pot or the illusion of one. Number three. Mix all ingredients and allow the mixture to congeal into a large orange mass and let it stew in the pot for several months, heating the populace with racist rhetoric. now that the refugee crisis has risen, knead it back into the mixture along with any leftover xenophobia, bigotry, or fears of terrorism lying around in your cupboard. Note, this recipe specifically calls for Islamic terrorism. Even a small splash of domestic terrorism will sour the mix, so store your terrorisms separately. 4. As for misogyny, a little goes a long way, so be careful. Note, if trouble starts to bubble up in the pot, put a lid on it. 5. At this point, everything may be coming to a boil. It may be coming to a point of boiling over. Common sense would call for lowering the temperature, but that would obscure the full, rich flavor. Note, to prevent progressives from sticking together, whisk in some egg yolks. 6. Whip the ingredients into a pungent, gravy-like sludge. 7, once it seems edible, serve on Election Day. Be advised, however, that this recipe is not meant to appeal to all tastes. In fact, most Americans have never been exposed to a dish like this and probably won't be able to stomach it. But as long as we don't vote, or aren't able to, thanks to
or don't eat it.
Yeah, thanks to the repeal of key provisions of the Voting Rights Act, your dinner should be a hit. There we go. A recipe for an election. Some words from a writer named Jenna Friedman.
So let's hope that this is in a local, this local election that we are having today is not influenced by those elements. I mean, I'm still happy to live in Ames, which is a small, friendly community where we embrace our differences and really try to get along. So go out there, folks, and vote. Be an active citizen. Enjoy the freedoms and the privileges and the wonderful local characters that we have here in Ames, Iowa.
Yes.
In Central Iowa.
We are all in this together. Today, we have food in the studio. We're going to be holding it up to the microphone for your perusal.
Yes, we're going to be eating for you.
So, Donna Priskintis and Evan Taylor, talk about what we have here to taste.
Well, we decided, Evan and I, that we were going to do a little exploration of these sort of traditional pocket foods. And Evan has made burrocks. You want to talk about the history and the provenance of burrocks, Evan?
Yeah, at least as much as I know. First off,
spell
the,
it first.
Oh, yeah, sure. Burrocks. So B-I-E-R-O-C-K-S. Burrocks.
Burrocks. All right.
Yeah. So a burrock is, it's a German originated food, if I'm recalling correctly. And essentially what it is you make a pocket of dough that surrounds a ground hamburger meat and onions and cabbage.
And Lon and I are about to chow into Evan's product here.
Right. So, I mean, like, it's kind of like a German hot pocket, but is infinitely more delicious and not filled with the saturated grossness of microwavable
food. Right. They're not fried.
Right. Yeah.
Tell us about the dough.
Yeah, sure. So I seem to use a different recipe every time I do the dough. But the one that I did this time around, start off with just 2 cups of flour and a package of yeast in a saucepan.
Okay, so it's a yeasted wheat-based.
That's right.
Yep. Of course, because it's German. Okay.
So then in a saucepan, you heat together some milk, some sugar, some butter, and some salt, and put that in with your flour and your yeast so that you activate the yeast with the warmth. Add a couple more cups of flour and some eggs and just beat it for a while.
Oh, eggs in the dough. Okay.
Eggs in the dough. Mm-hmm. Yep, that's right. And then just, stir in about as much flour as you can. You usually end up with about 4 cups in the mixture in total. Turn it onto a floured surface. I used a cutting board and just kind of
wait. Did it rise?
Yeah. After I kneaded it for about 6 to 8 minutes, and then tossed it in a greased bowl overnight, where it rose
overnight.
You don't have to do that. I just did it because that's how the timing worked out for me this time around. But I usually let it rise for about an hour or so, and then roll it out, kind of a thin sort of sheet cut into 3x3 squares. I like to actually have the dough be a little bit thicker. I like a nice bready beer rock.
Okay, so the beer rock is one beer rock is a 3x3 square?
Yeah.
Or
3 inches
is that
by
two?
3 inches is one beer rock. Yeah.
3 inches by 3 inches?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then, you know, you put your cabbage, onion, ground beef mixture.
Which has been cooked together, right?
That's
okay.
Right.
Any seasonings? Salt and pepper?
Salt, pepper, cayenne. Keep it kind of simple, mm-hmm. really. Nothing too crazy, although, like, you can go as nuts as you want. I mean, I've made kind of like a Mexican-inspired beer rocks, toss in some cumin and some coriander, you know. Well, it makes sense. The Germans taught the Mexicans how to brew beer, so why can't the Mexicans teach the Germans how to, you know, spice up the beer rocks, right? But yeah, then you just fold the corners together, pinch them, seal it up, toss it in the oven at 375 for about 30 minutes.
Wait a minute, you lost me.
Oh.
Okay, so you take this 3-inch square.
Right.
You put the meat and the vegetables in it, and how do you fold it so that it's sealed up?
Oh, yeah. You make the corners meet, and then you kind of pinch it together, you know.
Like you're pulling together a garbage bag.
Yeah, sort
of. Right, but it's not a triangle. It comes out flat. How do you...
Oh, yeah. It's very, very flat and round. You must kind of press it down, or did it...
Yeah, I push it down a little bit.
Very good, yeah. Yeah. Because it is a self-sealed.
There's some hand manipulation here. Yeah. Right.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, you've got, like, a piece of paper that you fold together like that. It still ends up being a square, essentially.
Yeah.
You know? Okay.
There you go.
So, kind of do it like that, and then, seal it, kind of pinch it together, if it's not cooperating, you can use water to kind of act as a paste a little bit and toss it in the oven. Yeah.
So then you bake them for how long? At what temperature?
30 minutes at 375 or until golden brown. Sometimes it takes a little bit less time depending on your oven.
Do you have to grease the pan or there's enough oil in the...
I grease the pan. You don't necessarily have to. You can put it on like a slip mat or something like that, you know, a little silicone baking sheet. And that works just fine as well, but I like to grease the pan, just put a little butter on, you know. Adds a little bit of flavor to the bottom crust,
too. We have
to
note that we are eating them with mustard.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I love it. I mean, like, if I had time, I would have brought in some nice whole grain mustard, but didn't have time to run to the store.
Some homemade German mustard?
Oh, of course. Yeah. that's right. But, I mean, mustard is, in my experience, the way to go, although barbecue sauce is equally delicious. I know that my brothers usually ate them with ketchup or something like that.
Oh, of course, the all-purpose. You know, yes.
I mean, you can do any condiment, really, you know.
Well, I really like them with mustard. Way to go, Evan.
It's really nice. It's cold and brown all the way around. It's this little circle. And, yes, keeping with the theme here, it is a encased little meat sandwich, and you can keep your fingers sort of clean there. It's an encased little pocket. And, oh, you mentioned earlier, too, beer. I think beer rock. That's what they're called.
Is there beer in the beer rocks?
No, there isn't, although...
beer with.
Drink
beer
with.
In the past, I have experimented a little bit with putting some beer in the dough.
In the dough.
Adds kind of a nice richness to it. Usually keep it... usually do like a lighter beer, although I've gone as dark as amber ale.
Well, where's
before.
My beer to go with my beer rock?
I know. I just think people would frown upon us drinking beer in the studio. Isn't it a shame?
It is noon. I don't know.
We might get even funnier. Who knows? Careful.
This is true.
Get a little ribald here.
Ribald. Thank you, Evan. These were great. I had never heard of beer rocks before, although there are... pocket foods, handy, put it in your pocket foods all over the world. And beer rocks is a new one.
Well, what were we talking? What's the Italian when we were talking about?
Calzone.
See, that's I've made calzone. And then there's
over thing.
Yeah, it's like a pizza in a pocket. And the Peruvians, the Chileans make empanadas. Same
together thing.
Similar thing. Well, I'm going to talk about pupusas, which is the El Salvadorian.
Very good.
But then there's tamales.
Well, if you want to get kind of small and delicate, there's a little dim sums and things.
Yeah, the Chinese ones.
Oh, and in Ukraine, they do pierogies, which are smaller, but they're little meat meat thingies. At,
and yeah. Oh, and what's the Cornish?
Pasties. Pasties, pasties, pasties.
Pasties.
Thank
yeah,
you,
Yeah, I
Donna.
Said pasties, and Lana told me, no, that's another thing that one uses...
For other purposes.
For dancing purposes.
Burlesque.
Yeah, very good. Yes. Very good.
Burlesque. There we go. Mm-hmm. So pasties, pasties, da-ba-da-ba-da.
Yeah. We'll talk
tomato,
about
tomato.
We'll talk about some of these things. And I have some information about Cornish pasties later. But, Donna, what did you bring in?
Okay. So I did pupusas. Here you go. Try one, Lana. Try one, Evan. Now, it goes with, you have a pupusa, and this is called a curtido. Which is a mixture. This goes with it. And this had to sit overnight. Here's for yours.
Okay. So she's putting a coleslaw kind of salad-y mixture next to my... Now, this looks completely different than what Evan made.
Evan made
kind of a yeast bun with stuff in it. Donna's looks more like a pancake.
It's like a little... It's like a little corn pancake that's
corn
stuffed
pancake.
With. This one has cheese and onion, which is very traditional. So pupusa, P-U-P-U-S-A, and the place where you get it is called the Pupusaria.
Really?
Pupusaria. So it's from El Salvador. And basically you take masa. Now, do not try and make this with cornmeal, okay?
Ah.
It has to be.
What is the difference? I thought masa was just ground up cornmeal. No?
Well, okay, here's the one. The explanation of this requires me to say a word that does not fall easily from my tongue. However, it's called nixtamalization or something like that.
Good
right?
job. Good job.
Okay, so it means that the corn has been as in hominy, you know, and that's something that's more familiar to us. Hominy has been nixtamalized also. So they take the corn kernels and it's soaked in a... Is it acid or a base? What's lye? Lye is a base, right? Okay. So it's soaked in lye or something like that, which then removes the outer husk of it and somehow also enhances the vitamin content of the corn. One of the B vitamins is improved by nixtamalization.
Nixtamalization.
Yeah. And it was originally... Oh, there's an old story. I've forgotten where, but someplace a long time ago, they had the corn laying in some water and something that had lime in it.
Ashes from the wood.
Ashes. There you go.
Because
I was thinking it was bird doo-doo or something.
Oh,
but no. Okay, sorry.
No.
Wood ashes got mixed in, and then they discovered that soaked the hull off and created a different process. So you can buy masa. There are many, you know, any good Mexican store will have it. M-A-S-A, Masa Harina. I used Bob's Red Mill Organic Golden Corn Masa Harina, pride of the mill. And so the recipe is fairly simple. You just mix. Now, here's the tricky part. Well, one of the tricky parts. Different corns, like different wheats, retain water at a different slightly. So the recipe I read said a cup and a half of warm water to 2 cups of masa harina. Okay, so when I first did it, it was too dry. So this batch that I made, I actually used 2 cups of water to 2 cups of masa harina. And it was a little too sticky. So,
nothing else? No eggs or?
No, nothing but water and masa harina.
Okay.
And you just mix it up. You let it sit 10 minutes so that the water really plumps up the masa. That part is really easy. Now, before you do that, you have to make the curtido. So the curtido is, it's like slaw. So it's finely chopped cabbage, onions, and carrots. Then some Mexican oregano, salt and pepper, and a tiny bit of sugar. Now, not much. I put almost the same amount of sugar as I did salt. Then you put a mixture of water and apple cider vinegar. And at this point, this has sat for about 12 or 14 hours. It starts to pickle, and that's how
yes.
it's supposed to be.
It has a bit of a kick to it.
Yeah.
The acid in there is doing its job.
Yeah.
And it goes very well. Yes.
Yeah, it does. Because by itself, the pupusa is you know, you want to put something on it, just like you put the mustard on the Biroc, some kind of sauce. And this is what they eat with it in El Salvador, which is a good, healthy dose of vegetables. So the trick in making them, once you've got the masa ready to go, you take a ball in your left hand about the size of, I would say, a golf ball, somewhere between a golf ball and a ping pong ball, right?
Okay.
Not terribly large. And then, and I've seen the ladies in the pupuserias do it, and it's just like, they make it look so easy, but somehow they punch a hole in the ball, and they run their fingers, their thumb, that hole goes with the thumb, and then you push it all the way around until you have a pocket in
there. Oh, a pocket.
Yeah, and but somehow they're keeping the sides up enough so that then in the pocket they stuff, like these are grated cheese and onion sautéed in olive oil. Mm. Some of the other options that are normal are pork, like shredded cooked pork, or beans, like some mashed pinto beans with I did some last night with beans and onion, and I threw a little more oregano in it. So you stuff the little hole that you've made, and somehow you make the dough close over it. And these ladies do this with holding it in their left hand and kind of squeezing it, and they fold it all together, and then they pat it flat into a pancake, and then they saute it on a griddle.
Yours are beautiful, but it sounds like it's a little trick to kind of make them come out.
I would say, the first ones I made last night, and I've eaten lots of them and seen them made, but I've never made them myself. So I'm walking away here, and the first one, I have to say, it was too thick. It was tasted like pure cornmeal. Of course, mine got holes in them, and I had to put little bits on. And, you know, I think it's something, maybe it's genetic. Maybe if you're El Salvadorian, you're born knowing how to make pupusas. Or, I suspect more likely, you have watched your grandmother and your mother and all of your aunts make them for all of your life, and somehow you just know how to do it.
Oh, you say that there are pupuserias, so that must mean this is kind of people eat them a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yum. Mm. Very good. And it's good.
It's like it's sort of like what the Mexicans eat for tacos. Mm-hmm. It's very, very common, you know, family food. Oh, I have to say, I haven't had this morning. It sat overnight, and really, this is the curtido, has gotten really good.
Yeah, it's coming up to say howdy. This,
I think we could have curtido on other things.
It's very, very nice.
Evan, what's your impression? Have you had pupusas before?
I have never had pupusas before. That's quite delicious. You know, it's sort of like imagine a very thick corn tortilla with filling in a way. That's fantastic, especially, again, going back to the, you said it's called curtido, the acidity of that is very, very pleasant with the kind of, what am I looking for? You know, just the
savoriness?
The savoriness, of the pupusa itself, you know.
Oh, yeah,
fantastic.
And it's quite a nice, in fact, it's such a dose of vegetables that last night when I was practicing on my family, I could not get my grandson, of course, to eat the vegetables. He's 13. Who eats vegetables? So he had his with salsa.
That's sort of a vegetable. It's kind of gross. I mean,
don't tell him.
It would be interesting to see see this paired with like guacamole or something like that. Ooh. You know, the smoothness to the.
I like the crunchy.
Yeah, to the crunchy of the pupusa.
So pupusas are fried or baked.
Well,
or pan warm.
Griddled. I put a little olive oil in.
So it's a wonderful combination here. This is, do we eat well on this show or what? This is KHOI, Community Radio for the Heart of Iowa, and this is the Donna Lana Kitchen, Tasty Radio for the Heart of Iowa, too.
Yum, yum, crunch, crunch. And some more? Thank you.
We're back. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. We are in the Donna Lana Kitchen studio today around our kitchen table. And we're here to remind you that we get by with your good donations. And this radio station is growing. It's growing. 5 years ago, it was just kind of a gleam in the local community's eye. And here we are producing great stuff. Of our show, of course, but lots of other local programming, and there's national programming, too. The Donna Lana Kitchen was recently aired on a National Pacifica Radio program.
Imagine that. They want to know what's going on in Iowa.
Every now and then, they kind of ask what's going on local radio stations. There's a show called Sprouts that you can find on this radio station, and they took a Donna Lana Kitchen show because we had information here that they thought people around the country would like to hear. It was a show about food at first.
Which we are very proud of. Yeah.
We talked to Patty Yoder, who is the coordinator of that fine program. So that information about Ames went all over the country, wherever the national production of Pacifica Radio goes. So look for that show, Sprouts, and you can probably find that.
I want to tell our listeners and all of our friends one more time about Food at First, because this is a program here in Ames run completely by local people and local churches, multiple ones, where it means that in our city it's possible that no one has to go hungry. And I think a good reason that this was chosen for airing nationally is this is a program that could be replicated many, many places around the country. It's basically volunteers cook meals every day, and from donated food, and I believe places like Walmart and Hy-Vee give all their past sell-by date food. Plus, it has a large food pantry. We're doing really, really good stuff in this wonderful little small town here in the middle of the country. I'm very proud to be an Ames resident.
And I'm proud of being part of this radio station. I never thought I'd be on the radio, but here I am. Yeah, you didn't either. No, they convinced Donna and I to start doing this show, and we just started chatting, and we still are going. It's 5 years and counting, for goodness sakes. Yes, it is. KHOI is observing an anniversary of sorts this month. We're five and one quarter years old.
Okay. It was on August 15th, 2012, that your community radio station went on the air for the first time. And much has happened since we first turned on the transmitter.
Oh, my. We featured many wonderful shows, talented programmers, and exciting events from our historic Pantorium Studios in downtown Ames.
And we have enjoyed building our community through radio, and we've gotten this far because of our hardworking volunteers and our loyal listeners.
Yes, we
whoever
have.
Whoever they may be.
Yes, they are. We especially want to thank you. Thank you, our members. Thank our supporters who provide the financial funding needed to keep this station on the air. So, if you're already a member of KHOI, thanks so much for your support. And remember to re-donate for the year.
And if you're not a member, now is the time to sign up. The basic memberships are just a meager little $55 per year, about 15 cents a day. Or you can become a friend of KHOI at $250 a year or $20 a month.
What a deal. What a deal. There's a special incentive to give to KHOI right now. Several of our loyal listeners have created a $30,000 challenge. For this fun drive.
We need it. Mm-hmm.
That means that every dollar you pledge earns a second dollar from the challenge grant, and that means your money is going twice as far to support KHOI. See, your friends and neighbors think this is a good idea, and they're giving money, and you can too, and you can help support this radio station.
So join right now by calling the station at 515-292-2878 or go online at khoifm.org and hit the donate button or text us 515-200-7758. You can also wish us a happy fifth birthday.
Yes, yes. And also remember that you could be part of this in the flesh. Step down and see us here at 410 Douglas in the old Pantorium building on Douglas Avenue here in Ames. We can always use help doing things. If you want to be on the radio, we can talk to you about doing that. Everybody has a passion, and it's nice to hear about other people's passion, what they like to talk about. It's just amazing the kind of variety you can get.
It's true. If you look at the schedule of our programming, what a reflection of the diversity in our community.
Yes.
We got a lot of sort of interesting characters around here.
We do. We do. You can hear the world's only live 8-track tape music show here. I mean, where else could you hear that? You can hear polkas, you can hear hip-hop, you can hear blues, you can hear jazz, and folk music. And
young people.
Yeah, all of us.
Old people.
That's
we
us.
We are a multi-generational community.
We are. And thanks for your support. Yes. We're here in the kitchen today. Evan, our engineer, cooked up a storm, and Donna's cooked up a storm. We're kind of munching away here. We hope you're getting hungry. This is the noon hour. And we'd like to encourage people to cook. Try things. Sometimes it doesn't always work, but it's always good. So we have heard about biroks today and
pupusas.
This is pocket food. Here's kind of a nod to the first person that sort of got this going in our modern times. The Earl of Sandwich was sitting around and at the gambling table. And yes, that's who invented what the sandwich is named after. The Earl of Sandwich. He was so engrossed in his poker game, he hollered to one of his peons to bring him something between two slices of bread. And there you have a nice, easy way to keep on losing money and eating at the same time. Oh, dear. All right. Anyway, the Earl of Sandwich may be started, but all sorts of countries and all sorts of mothers and grandmothers have been putting things into pockets of something that will hold your meal for later, because people went off to the field, they went off to work, they went off to the mines. And I want to talk a little bit about the Cornish pasty. It's a baked pastry, and it's traditionally associated with Cornwall, England, but it's kind of all over the world now. It's a folded pastry, and here's a neat little fact, since 2011, it has received the protected geographical indication in Europe, which means that recipe made with beef or diced potato, Swede, also known as yellow turnip or rutabaga, onion seasoned with salt and pepper, and baked, that is the official Cornish pasty. It's kind of like, don't they do that in Italy some places? They have the official Parmesan cheese. See, you know, from?
Yes.
Yeah.
Designated.
And so
that means it has to come from that geographical location.
Yeah. Yes. And just like the pupuserias around, there's Cornish pasty places around. And
I have a question.
Yeah.
Do you think they have Cornish pasties out at the Mucky Duck?
Oh, I wonder. We could encourage.
Evan, do you know?
I do not know.
I certainly hope
they do.
All right, this might be a little road trip out to the Mucky Duck.
Wish there was a place in town that did beer rocks, too.
Well, you know. Hint.
Yep,
you get
exactly,
to start your
right.
own German restaurant, just like Marcus started his own English restaurant. Hey,
there you go. Well.
All this stuff will go good with beer. Trust me. Although it is associated with Cornwall in England, pasty derives from the medieval French word for pie. It used to be filled with venison or salmon or other stuff. And side crimp pastries, and folding over a circle, giving you a half circle, gave rise to the suggestion that Cornish miners, who use this a lot, this is Cornish miner food, as in go down in the mine.
Carry it down with you.
Yeah.
Eat on the job.
It might have been really handy for them because it could hold the thick edge of the pastry and eat out the middle, because I just bet you they didn't have your handy wipes down there. So I think they had pretty dirty hands. And then perhaps the edge of the pastry was later discarded, thereby that ensuring that dirty fingers, possibly including traces of arsenic from the mining process, did not touch his food or his mouth. However, many old photographs shows that pasties were eaten any old way or even eaten out of being held with a bit of paper or muslin and eaten the whole thing. I think you'd be hungry enough that you would eat the whole thing.
Yeah.
I mean, it's all very good. So they do say the true Cornish way to eat a pasta is to eat the whole darn thing. And also it's a suggestion here that traditionally, miners had their wives or whoever was making their pasties put their initial on their pasties so they wouldn't have to fight with it later. Yeah, wouldn't you know?
A little pasty stealing, right?
Yeah. So there's a lot of variety here. I mean, you can do a lot with the Cornish pasty. It's a baked little pie, and it's all crimped together. Evan was giving us suggestions for things to dip it in. You could put just onions, leeks, and cheese in it, or you can all sorts of things. So the idea of making a pocket and filling it with something, that's a good idea. So we have Cornish pasty. I found Cornish pasties, believe it or not, in southwest Wisconsin. There is a historic, 150 years ago, there was a little Cornish community there. It's the little town of Mineral Point, Wisconsin. And it's, all kinds of limestone buildings. The whole little valley is just full of rocks. You couldn't grow cows very well there. So they decided to mine. There was iron mining there. And yes, the Cornish folks moved in and they opened up their own little mines there. And yes, they kept making their pasties. It's a historic site now. And I was always struck by how small things were. Doorways were low. People must have been small then. Fitting down in the mine. Or bent over. I don't know. And you can still get Cornish pasties there in the little town of Mural Point. They don't do any iron mining there, but they do have a little artist colony there. So there you go. So Cornish pasties. We'll hear a little bit more music here. This is music from a local kid. I went into a downtown business about last year at this time, and there was a young boy. Come to find out, he was 13 years old at the time. He was sitting at the piano there in Chocolatery's Stomp, playing away, and he was having a fine time, and he had a little CD for sale. His name is Sam Packard, the kind of kid that instead of spending his time on his local, on his personal computer device, he found himself a piano, and he was just noodling away there. He did a whole bunch of wonderful songs, and he also has a CD out called Playing Around, Acoustic Piano by Sam Packard. This is what a 13-year-old kid can do.
Oh, cute.
There you go. And here's his, here's a little bit of his tune called Staying Cool. A little bit of piano wizardry there. Oh, my good piano music from Sam Packard, a young man who lives right here in Ames.
I tell you what, Lana, like, Sam can really play, and I'm really happy that you you brought that in. That's really special, because without community radio, I never would have heard that, ever, you know? It's just really cool that we can, unlike, you know, big corporate radio stations that are playing just your top 40 playlists, basically, we get to decide what we play, and that allows us to play, like, you know, local things, things that maybe the general public isn't going to be exposed to without, like, really trying hard to find it.
You got to see the CD liner. It says, dedicated to Grandpa Dean and Grandma Linda, Grandpa Charles and Grandma Bev. The layout is by Dad. The photography is by Mom.
This is a local
very
effort.
Cool.
This is a local effort. Yes, it is. That is Sam Packard. You're listening to KHOI. You can find out more about the Donalana Kitchen at khoifm.org. We have a recipe page. We have archives there. If you can't get enough of the Donalana Kitchen, you can find it all on the website. And just lately, a little update here. The recipe page has been updated by our great webmaster, Ron Carson. And it has Jan Libby's squash, apple, cheddar, bake recipe.
Just in time for Thanksgiving.
Just in mm-hmm. time. We talked to her, I think 2 weeks ago, about mm-hmm. her farm.
Maybe more, I think.
Yeah, her farm. We talked about squash. We talked about what it was like to have a farm start, grow, and turn into great things. She has a farm called One Step at a Time, and we do that one step at a time right here. You can find that recipe page on the Donalana Kitchen website, khoifm.org. Let's hear a little bit more music from Sam Packard. This one is called Flow. Some piano music by Sam Packard. Good job, kid. Good job, Sam Packard. From Ames. This is the Donalana Kitchen. We're on KHOI Radio. And this is to remind you to become a member of this fine radio station for only $55.
Annually.
Annually. Mm-hmm. Or give more. So call 515-292-2878 or text us at 515-200-7758 or join us online, khoifm.org. There is a magic donate button there. Now, the Donalana Kitchen tries to keep up on things. We have some things from our Donalana Kitchen news desk. Tick-a-tick-tick-a-tick-a-tick-a-tick-a-tick-a-tick. That's the ticker tape. What do you have for us today?
I thought that was Lana.
No, that's ticker tape.
Oh, okay.
We have a small budget here, but that was in my ticker tape mode. There we go.
Okay. What's up? So in the past few weeks, there was a very important meeting of something called the NOSB, which is the National Organic Standards Board. Since the word organic is the only federally regulated label. I mean, none of the other labels that you see and love and care about actually have a legal standard behind them. So Organic, however, does. So when you see that little green USDA organic label, you will know that this these guys are following a set of rules that are, in fact, legal, legally binding. And not only that, they are third-party certified. That means somebody has been in there to check that the producers, the manufacturers, the farmers have actually followed the letter of the law. So the National Organic Standards Board was created in the original legislation as a governing body. So it is – the people are elected to it, and they are chosen. There are some farmers, some producers, some manufacturers. It's kind of divvied up between all the sections of the industry, and these people have to be voted in, and they have a term of governance, and it is run through somebody at the USDA. So this is part of the structure, and they make the final determination on what changes need to be made to the law. Because when the law was written, of course, we had to plan for things might be different 10 years down the line or 20 years down the line or something. So at this NOSB meeting, which happened to be in Florida this year, I think they meet twice or three times a year. I can't remember. But so on the agenda was a very contentious issue. Whether or not hydroponics should be allowed to be certified as organic. Now, hydroponics, a little refresher course, are vegetables and other plant things which are grown in water, and it's fed nutrients through the water. And various technologies have changed over the years with it. They are now using it in sort of like walls of things that are growing up in urban areas. And it's by some, it's touted as an environmentally positive thing. Other people dispute that because they say, well, you know, what about all the materials? Anyway, it's a contentious issue. I mean, I suppose if you were starving, you wouldn't mind eating hydroponics. But I do find personally that I find flavor-wise that the vegetables produced by hydroponics, they taste a little watery to me. That's just my chefly opinion here. So, I mean, although there are certainly worse things to do than eat hydroponics, obviously if things are grown indoors in a controlled environment, they don't have some of the pest problems. They don't have to use pesticides in the same way. Anyway, they had been sort of informally been allowed, this industry has grown up quite a bit in the last 10 years, and they had been allowed to use the organic standards. And then somebody said, well, wait a minute, the NOSB has never certified that this is okay, because in fact it is a soil-less growing modality. Whereas in the organic standards, part of the organic standards are that one must improve the quality of the soil. So clearly this didn't really fit there. So they had a big kerfluffle, and everybody's been talking about it for a while. And they finally had the vote this week or last week or something, very contentious. And now hydroponics are legally allowed. It was a very close vote, I believe 7-8 or something like that. But the press around it, this was so the press reporting on it, it goes something like, well, kind of they said, you know, the old organic guys really did not approve of this. The older generation really didn't like this.
How old?
I don't know. It just said old.
I'm feeling kind of creaky.
Yeah. So the older, because Lana is an older organic farmer. Well, here's the deal. I really felt that that was ageism, because they didn't have to say older. They should have said, and have been more journalistically correct, is that the people who were objecting to the hydroponics and didn't want to do it were, in fact, the original writers and the people who established the original organic standard. So it's not that they were old. It's that they originally wrote the standard, and they wrote it very specifically to include soil. So somehow this change was made, and it was attributed to, you know, out with the old and let's bring on this newfangled hydroponic stuff. And I felt that was not exactly clear journalism.
So heads up, folks. Kind of keep track of what they're putting in all that water.
Now hydroponically grown produce. You know, if there are worse things on the planet, I'm not happy about it. But what I was really unhappy about is that the people who wrote the organic standards not that long ago, maybe 20 years, they are now considered old.
Oh, things
old.
Happen fast.
Oh, it's old-fashioned. Oh.
Yeah, it does tend to get our dander up a little bit,
yeah,
doesn't it?
Yeah, it's old. It's old to grow food in soil, you know? Well, I guess, you know, if you're getting ready to live on the moon, hydroponics is a good idea.
Oh, as a kid, I thought being an astronaut might be a really good thing. It was between that and being a cowgirl. You know, it was kind of half and half. And I think I'd rather stay here and be a cowgirl
myself.
Yeah, me too.
They're old-fashioned, too, Laura.
Yeah. Oh, okay. All right. Yeah. Well, there you go. Okay.
There's no cowgirls anymore, you know.
Oh.
Except in the rodeo.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, I never was very good with horses. I guess I better stick to what I'm doing. I'll just keep growing in dirt.
You grow your tomatoes and your garlic in dirt. None of this hydroponic, newfangled. Let's be the old curmudgeons here.
We wrote
the organic standards. Excuse me.
Well, Donna's just tearing away here. Thanks for joining us today. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. We've got a little bit of an upcoming announcement here. An evening of fundraising, friend-raising, feathers, fur, and frivolity to support the Iowa Wildlife Center will be coming up this Friday, November 10th, 6:30 to 9:30. Nature Lodge, Raccoon River Park, 2500 Grand Avenue, West Des Moines. This is an event to help support the Iowa Wildlife Center. Go to iowawildlifecenter.org.
And when is it?
It is this Saturday, Friday, November 10th in
Saturday,
Des Moines. Friday, November 10th in Des Moines. There it is, Iowa Wildlife Center. Wildlife.
Support your wildlife. We all need a little wildlife.
We do. Speaking of wildlife, support this fine radio station. We've had music today by Sam Packard, fine piano music, and also
a young local lad.
Yes, and we'll go out with some music by William Coulter and Friends from their CD called Crooked Road. Thanks for joining us around our table today. We've talked about pocket foods, pockets. Think of your pockets and all of that money that's weighting you down. Send it toward KHOI FM.
Take the money out of your pockets and put the food in.
Yeah, I like that. It's a lot better,
tastier. Eat money.
Yeah. This fine radio station runs on the power of volunteers. Become a member. Put your money where your ears are. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We've had fine engineering by Evan Taylor and also some good B-Rocks, too. Thank you, Evan.
Yum.
Eat good food and enjoy life.